Hey, everybody. Welcome to Syntax. Today, we're talking about JSR. Is it the new NPM? Is it a new package registry? Pretty excited to talk about it. A lot of opinions flying on what it is. So we have Lucas Casanato on today, who is a software engineer at Dino. Dino's the folks behind JSR and a member of TC39. So obviously knows a lot about JavaScript and has a lot of thoughts and whatnot behind the whole package ecosystem in JavaScript. So welcome, Luca. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also, if you're asking questions of your code, like, hey, why did this bug happen? Maybe you want to have a tool like Sentry on your side. Head on over to sentry.io/syntax. Sign up and you'll get 2 months for free.
You want to give us a quick rundown of, I know I gave a little intro, but give us a little bit more info.
Yeah. So JSR is a new JavaScript registry that we're working on, built for modern JavaScript, for TypeScript, for any runtime that wants to use it, backwards compatible with Node and NPM. Just an all-around better experience for publishers of packages, for users of packages.
That's awesome. And we're going to go into all of the benefits of it. But I think what most people are tuning in to hear is, even since I posted it for the first time, is why do we need another package registry? Isn't NPM fine? Is this a replacement for, a lot of people seem to think that it was like a PNPM alternative. And I just want to like start off first clarifying what it is and where it lives within the ecosystem. And then we'll get into, I guess, a lot more of the benefits. So like, let's start there. What's wrong with NPM? Why do we need a new registry?
That is a great question. So NPM hasn't really evolved in the past 10 years, right? It's like there's been the addition of the files tab, and like there's been the little blue TypeScript icon in the top left they added a couple years ago. And other than that, that's kind of been it, right? And this is not really how we want JavaScript to progress. JavaScript is a very dynamic language. There's new frameworks popping up all the time. But in our package management and package registry ecosystem, things haven't really changed over the past 10 years. And I don't think for the better, right? We are still... So when JavaScript started out, we didn't really have all these different concepts of common JS and ESM and TypeScript and bundled and minified and all these things, right? You just published some source code and consumers would then import that source code and do whatever they want with it. And over time, this has shifted to you write your source code for your package in TypeScript, and then you have to compile it to CommonJS and to ESM, and you have to publish d.ts files, and you have to have an exports field in your package JSON that has conditional exports in it, and then you have to like have some nice documentation site for it, and all these things, right? And it's sort of gone away from being an easy place for you to publish your tools to you have to spend a lot of time configuring things before you can get anything usable onto NPM. And we kind of want to go get back to where JavaScript started out here, to this place where you can just publish your source code. And then Node understands ESM, Bud understands ESM, Cloudflare understands ESM, everyone understands ESM, Dino understands ESM. So why not just only use ESM, right? And then TypeScript is the most popular alternative syntax, I guess, for JavaScript there is right now. I don't remember what the latest stats are, but there's every month there's a new stat about how many new projects are using TypeScript versus JavaScript, and that number is just going up, right? And it's above 50%. Realistically, like, if you're writing a new project, you're writing it in TypeScript. Yeah. So why shouldn't our registry support TypeScript out of the box? So that's exactly what JSR does. JSR can publish your TypeScript to it, and then we'd figure out how to get it to everybody who is going to import your package. And if that means transpiling it to JavaScript and ESM and d.ts files, we'll do that behind the scenes without you having to think about it. And if you're importing from Dino, that just supports TypeScript. That'll work just fine. If you're importing from Bun, which supports TypeScript, that'll work just fine without any transpilation.
Wow. So to be clear, is ESM only? Is that explicit?
Yes.
Cool. And does that enable you to do some of the cooler things that you all are doing, or is it just a detail?
No, absolutely. ESM is much better to statically analyze than CommonJS. And we do a lot of static analysis on the source code you upload because we provide things like documentation generation and certain lints and things that are just built into the registry. And we wouldn't be able to do those if we had to support a CommaJS in addition to ESM. And also, it makes it very simple, right? You don't have to make a choice when you're writing a package. You're writing in ESM.
Yeah, thank you for that.
We had Mark Erickson on the podcast, and he maintains Redux as well as a couple packages around there. And like he went deep, and I had a whole talk with him on the podcast as well as at a conference about just like he's a smart guy, and he could not figure out how to get this thing to ship to absolutely everyone. And he just had to go nuclear and figure it all out. It's really, really tricky to do that type of thing. And then you see other people like Sindre Sorhas, who has a million modules. He just kind of ripped the Band-Aid off and says, ESM only. And quite honestly, he's probably responsible for a lot of people going all in on ESM. Or, sorry, not even going all in. Like, you can still use CommonJS packages. But we need to sort of move past that. So I'm kind of happy to hear about that type of thing. So I just want to like talk about like what it is really quickly to a bunch of people. And I think the first one, and I think you've done a good job just not saying Dino right off the bat, which is this is not a Dino only thing. This is going to be a package registry for anybody who consumes JavaScript, right?
That is absolutely correct. I'm here today with my JSR hat on. Well, actually, it's a TC39 hat, but imagine me with a JSR hat on, right? I am not here in a Dino capacity in that sense. This is a registry for absolutely everyone who uses JavaScript and TypeScript. And we really, really want to hammer this point down. Like, this package registry is not a Dino registry. This is the registry that you could use if you're using a Node Modules folder, if you're using Cloudflare Workers, if you're using Bun, if you're using Vite, if you're using Next.js on Vercel, if you're using AWS Lambda, does not matter, right? JSR will work with it. And if you write your packages only for Node, that's fine. Publish them to JSR anyway, right? You will get a bunch of benefits that you do not get from NPM. It is not a Dino registry. It is a everyone registry. It is a JavaScript registry. That's where the name comes from. JSR, JavaScript registry. Mm-hmm.
And in that regard, how do you go about installing things from this registry instead of just npm install blank?
Yes,
you
know? Great question.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And this depends on how you want to install your JSR packages. Mm-hmm. So like, maybe in Dino, Dino installs npm packages using npm colon specifiers. And similarly, you can install JSR packages with JSR colon specifiers. But in Node, everybody is using npm or pnpm or yarn, like package managers. And for those, you can just install JSR packages with npm or pnpm or yarn or bun or whatever you use to install right now. The only thing that you have to do is create an npm rc file, either in your home directory or in your project directory, which will tell npm that it's importing packages from JSR. And after that, you can just run npmi, and everything will just work. They will be put into your node modules folder. TypeScript will work. Everything will just work. Vite will work. Nothing else is set up.
So that's the kind of thing that we need to drive home here is that JSR, you can still use with NPM. You can still get the NPM packages that are not available on JSR yet.
Yeah.
However, I'm assuming the way that it works is that it would just proxies through JSR. And if JSR doesn't have it, it'll proxy it over to the NPM registry, right? Like at a high level?
Yeah. So the way it works is that if you're importing from NPM, all packages on JSR exist in sort of a virtual at JSR scope on NPM. Mm-hmm. So there's no packages on NPM that are published into the at JSR scope, so there's never a conflict here. So if you want to import, the Dino standard library FS package, you could do at JSR / STD underscore FS to import it in NPM. And yeah, this npmrc file just sets up npm to download anything in the @JSR scope from JSR, and everything else gets imported from npm. So these two can really completely coexist. All the existing npm tooling just works. Complete harmony.
That npm specifier thing. So if you're trying to imagine it right now, it's if you want to import something from JSR or npm, you say import whatever from, and then you you type JSR colon and the name of the actual package. And in Dino, I love this because I don't have to npm install something. I simply just type npm colon the name of the package, and it goes off and fetches it for me, which is really nifty. I really wish like Node would have that itself. And I'm curious, do you think that will ever be possible? Because like Node itself has implemented Node colon for Node internals. Will we eventually get that in, or can that be done with like some sort of hack?
Yeah, we think this could be done. This could be usually achieved through loaders. So like all the big tools like Vite and Rollup, and they all have this loader support. Node has it too now. I think it's --- imports is the flag you use for it. And with that, you can implement support for JSR colon specifiers. We haven't done this yet because we want to first give the broadest possible compatibility, and the broadest possible compatibility is through our Node modules compat. But over time, we hope that the ecosystem will build these loaders, and we'll publish docs for this. We'll publish docs for how to build these loaders. It's actually incredibly simple because JSR uses HTTP specifiers under the hood. Like all the files are loaded from HTTP. Which is the same way that browsers work. It's well-defined behavior. And there's like a very small layer on top of HTTP that you need to implement to sort of resolve the JSR colon whatever package to a specifier, right? And we'll have documentation for this, and we'll help people implement this. And over time, we hope that more and more tools will, like, we call this native JSR support, will support JSR natively in this way.
Cool.
I like that a lot because I like that the approach that you're taking is not, it works with Vite, but you got to install this Vite plugin and go into your config and change it. Like, that's not the case. It works with Vite right now by being able to work via NPM, right? And eventually, hopefully, Vite will say, let's add JSR support into it so it just works natively. There's not a plugin that needs to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of least resistant, you know, there's no resistance to get up and running with this tool, which I think is precisely what you need if you want people to replace their package manager, right? Well, I saw on Twitter a lot when this was announced or people started talking about it. Why can't we just fix NPM? Why do we have to have something?
Why can't you put your time into fixing NPM?
It's a great question. Right. So, you know, if GitHub or Microsoft or whoever is actually responsible for NPM nowadays, which is kind of difficult to tell, would open source all of NPM and say, hey, here's where you submit PRs, let's fix things, then absolutely we could do this. But they don't, right? It's a closed source product, which is, I don't know, still for profit. I'm not quite sure what their business model is, to be completely honest. They have this like monetization feature in it with private registries. This is absolutely not how we want to operate JSR. JSR is going to be a community resource. JSR will be open source. All of JSR will be open source. All the backend, the website, all tooling surrounding it, the docs, everything will be open source. I'm here as a member of the Dino company right now, but JSR will have a moderation team that will be based not just of contributors of Dino, but of the whole JavaScript ecosystem. We want this to be something that is really driven by JavaScript, by the JavaScript community, not by any individual company. And JSR is built to be very, very cheap to operate, which I think is very important because we don't want to monetize JSR in any way. Initially, the Dino company will pay for the hosting of JSR. We expect to be able to do this for a long time. It'll be very cheap to operate. If other companies want to engage here, this is something where we'd be totally happy to like have other people chip in, right? But I really want to drive home the point here. This is not a Dino registry. This is all of JavaScript registry. And that means that this needs to be managed by the JavaScript ecosystem, not by a single company. It needs to be paid for by the JavaScript ecosystem, not by a single company. And this is really what we're aiming to do here with JSR.
That's so good to hear that. Yeah. It's not the Dino registry, which I think that was some of what we heard, right? Or some of what people wanted to hear or did hear, you know?
I love this because I think some of the pushback you get from people is like, I just NPM install and I get everything that I want. I don't care about the size of my Node modules folder. That's one of the benefits of this is you're not downloading. Like we did a whole show of why is why is node modules so big? And it comes down to, it's a lot of text, you know, like text is surprisingly yeah. big, right? And I think people aren't realizing is the people who publish these modules, it's really difficult for them to do. And when you make things easier, people make cooler stuff. Case in point, totally outside of the JavaScript registry, you look at a tool we used on Mac OS X, Alfred, for a long time. There were some pretty cool plugins for Alfred. Raycast comes along, makes it authoring and publishing extensions for Raycast super easy. And boom, there's like 1,000 times more and way better plugins for actual Raycast. So there's lots of stuff I haven't published because I just don't want to get into it. It's just too much. I authored in TypeScript. I would love to simply just take the TypeScript file that I wrote and publish that sucker to the internet and for somebody to be able to consume it. But that's not the way it works. There's a whole bundling thing. You got to make sure your exports are all properly lined up. You got to think about CommonJS and ESM. And it's just a huge pain in the butt. And I think that, like, of course, if we have a new registry like JSR, mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot of bumps down the road. I think it's going to be really tricky. But I think long term, this is going to be a really exciting thing and a really good thing for the community. And just seeing what happened when NPM came on board and how we use it now. I NPM installed Home Assistant stuff, no problem. I think that this might be the next evolution of that. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, no, I do. I think what you're saying is absolutely correct, right? And I think there's like parallels that can be drawn here to like serverless compute infrastructure. There was a time when to host something, you had to sort of spin up a server somewhere, deal with like APT to install Nginx and like manage Let's Encrypt certificates and whatever, right? And now you write some JavaScript in like on cloudfieldworkers.com and click on deploy and it's live. 350 regions in what, 2 seconds. Yeah. Or you do the same on Unit Deploy or on Vercel or whatever, right? And if you like make this so easy that people could come up with really cool things that maybe they would have not spent time on doing previously because they didn't want to set up the Terraform configuration for this or the Amazon CDK whatever, right? Like this is you don't want to be dealing with boilerplate. You want to be writing the code that you actually want to write. That's why we're developers. We're not developers to like configure stuff, right?
Fuss around with CommonJS.
Somebody else, let someone else do that. and JSR is really, trying to do that. Give you a way to just write your code, publish your code, and then the registry will deal with the configuration. It will deal with hosting it quickly all over the world. It'll deal with serving it in to all the different users that want to use it and like generating documentation for it and all those things.
Yeah, let's dive into some of those features then, like auto documentation, like you just mentioned. Can you go deep on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So because you're publishing TypeScript source code, we have a lot more information that we can pull directly out of your source code as compared to like transpiled JavaScript or even d.ts files. Because we can look at your source code and see that you have a function here that you're exporting, which takes a string argument and like an options bag and returns a promise. And we can render that with a nice sidebar that says, like, here's all the functions this module exports. Here's what they take. Here's what they return. You have some JS doc on that. We'll render that with Markdown. You have some examples that we'll syntax highlight for you. Right? And this way, you have a really easy way for you to go to a package. You press the symbols button at the top. And this gives you all of the things that are exported by this package. It gives you a really quick, easy overview of everything you can do with this package. You don't have to read through long prose, anything, right? Mm-hmm. You can just see that. And you have search there, where you can search through symbols, you can search through the JS doc, you can search through the symbol names, the parameters, the return types. If there's a symbol in there that you don't recognize, you click on it, it takes you to the definition. If you want to see the source code, you click on the go to source button and it takes you to the source code. And this is the actual source code, right? This is not like some transpiled minified JavaScript. No. This is right. The actual source code. It's pretty nifty.
Yeah, I've gotten so used to this flow after working in Rust of using docs.rs to just understand more about the libraries instead of going to, you know, quick start documentation. I'm just reading the source, reading the inputs and outputs, reading the comments. So, yeah, this is definitely something that I'm happy to see.
Yeah. The docs are amazing. Like, so I got access to it.
I did not.
And oh, we should.
So sorry.
Sorry, I should have sent some emails there. But just like immediately, I went and published one of my packages, and I wrote all the docs I wrote it in TypeScript, and then I exported a couple types, and then I also wrote some JS doc on top of it to provide some examples, and then boom, like all the docs. It obviously is a small library, but all the docs are just automatically generated right out of that. You don't have to make sure the docs are not updated just such a smooth process to do it that way. And rather than have to generate some d.ts files and put them on at types and npm install them, that's such a pain to have to do. I'd rather just require the TypeScript file, be able to look at the docs, and not to mention the stack traces get so much better when you're simply just importing the authored TypeScript rather than some crazy minified bundled ship version. You got to go spelunking in node modules to figure out what went wrong.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And like these docs, we try to integrate them with like all kinds of resources. Like you can click on the package that you published, for example, you may be able to see, like you have a wait function that takes a number and returns a promise. If you click on promise, it sends you to the MDN page for promises. Hey, why not, right? Like this is the kind of thing that we just want to make it super easy for you to get to what you're looking for.
Awesome. In addition to that, I mean, there's the auto types thing so that you don't have to generate the d.ts files, right? Is that just, working similarly to how you're doing the automatic docs? Is that the scoop?
Yeah, so the way that works is that for tools that support importing TypeScript natively, so for example, Dino, we'll just give those tools the TypeScript files directly. And for the tools that don't, what we'll do is we'll take the TypeScript and strip out all the types. So we're turning it back into plain JavaScript. And then we also emit some d.ts files, but we also make sure to set up all the source maps in such a way that when you encounter an error and you get a stack trace, it actually shows the original source rather than the transpiled JavaScript. And then we put that into like an npm tarball, and that's what you get into your node modules folder for Node, for example, right? Because Node doesn't support executing TypeScript natively. If Node were ever to support using TypeScript natively, then it could also just consume the TypeScript directly. But yeah, for the tools that don't, we do the transpilation for you. You don't have to think about it. It just happens in the background, and you don't really have to think about it at all.
Yeah, I love that.
So another question we had commonly was like, well, can't you just put TypeScript files on npm? Like can't npm just... You can ship any files you want. People put movies on npm, So why can't npm just do that with TypeScript, and then you ingest the TypeScript with a build tool if you're using Node?
Yeah. Sure, you can try. But I think nobody's done this over the past 10 years because I don't think it's like a very viable approach, right? It means that now this is essentially the same problem as the loaders, where instead of it just being supported in all the tools natively, all the tools that you want to consume that package in now need to have some additional tooling set up. And this really, really limits how far you can distribute your packages. Because if you're going to have some like internal team at Google that has a predetermined build setup that maybe understands Node modules, want to try to import your package, they can't, because they cannot add a new loader to their Node build or whatever, right? Yeah, so you don't really want to do this. You want to have, for the tools that do not natively support the system, give them a way to easily downgrade. And with npm, if npm natively supported like looking at the tarball and transpiling TypeScript to JavaScript, this could be a viable approach, but npm doesn't, and I don't see npm doing it anytime soon, right? Like the last big feature they launched was, I think, package provenance, which does anybody even know what that is?
Who's begging for?
Wait, what is that? Package provenance.
Package provenance. It's like it's a security feature to be able to ensure that a package was actually published by the person who claimed is publishing the package. Mm. But yeah, this is exactly case in point, right? Like the last big feature they launched, you don't even know what it is. So
yeah, it's a bit of a bummer, really. Like I know they had laid off a good chunk of their team, and we had Darcy on from Volt, which is a similar-ish thing to JSR. He's kind of gunning for the same area. And he worked at NPM for a while, and he's like, yeah, man, we had the code tab in beta for like 3 years before that thing could go live. And not being able to see the code that you're NPM installing is wild. Like, yeah, I'm just going to download this random code from the internet. And then
randomly execute like a pack post install step on it too. Like, you can't even see what it's going to do.
Well, that's my next question is, Darcy was talking about a big part of Volt was being able to scan dependencies. And then we also had Frost from Socket on, and his whole company is doing a fantastic job at scanning every line of code that makes it in NPM and detecting the rogue ones, which is pretty interesting. So does JSR have any plans to do that for security as well?
So JSR is not doing any sort of scanning the same way that like Snyk or Socket are.
Yeah.
We expect that these tools will be able to natively integrate with JSR if they want to. We will have support for features like package provenance, even though maybe it's not such a super well-known feature, but it's useful for sort of supply chain security to be able to ensure that the person that is publishing a package is actually who they say they are. We also, all of our files are obviously hashed in such a way that like you can ensure that the files that are installed to disk are actually the files that the registry is intending to serve. We've put a lot of effort into making automatic publishing, tokenless publishing possible, which is sort of down the same train of thought as NPM's requirement for 2FA recently. I don't know if you saw this, but like NPM has required, I think, for the top 1,000 package authors that they enable 2FA. And in JSR, all packages you publish from your local machine must go through a sort of interactive authorization flow in the browser. So when you type in, you know, publish or JSR publish, it prints out a link, you click on the link, and then it shows you, here's what's going to happen. Do you want to authorize this or not? You sign in with your GitHub in the browser, you click OK, and then it goes and publishes. And this is sort of 2FA. And we want to, we're doing the same thing for publishing from GitHub Actions, where you do not have to set up any secrets. There's no like access tokens you can leak, but instead we use sort of built-in security mechanisms inside of GitHub Actions. For those who are familiar, OIDC tokens that let you publish directly from GitHub Actions without having to set up any tokens. So there's nothing to leak there. There's no way for you to accidentally expose your token to a bad actor that may then use them to publish anything like that. And all the tokens we use are very short-lived. We've thought about this to make sure that it's difficult for people to publish maliciously and to sort of avoid a lot of the pitfalls that NPM has or has had in the past, and we're trying to not repeat those mistakes.
The GitHub Action integration is pretty neat. Does that publish when you merge something into a branch on like every single commit, or does it only go on when you tag a release on GitHub?
So you can actually set it up however you want. It's just a step inside of your GitHub workflow file, the GitHub Actions workflow file. So you can set it up to publish on tag, or you can set it up to publish every commit. The way it works by default is that it looks at the version inside of your DinoJSON or JSR JSON file. And if the version is already published, it'll do nothing. It'll just skip over the step. And if it's not already published, it'll go publish it. So yeah, the way you can set it up, the way we've set it up in, for example, our standard library is that when you merge something to the main branch with a new version for any of the packages, it'll just go publish that package. And you don't have to tag. This is great for mono repos. But we've also heard feedback that for people that would just like to be able to publish on tag, so we'll have a flag for that. We can just specify the version directly in the publish command or JSR publish command.
Mm-hmm. I like that. How many times have you like had a bug fixed 6 months ago, but they haven't published a new version, then some white knight comes along and publishes their own version, and you have to go switch out your dependencies. The config file is a JSR.json or a Dino.json or a .jsonc, which I highly appreciate because package.json doesn't allow comments, and that's a big pain in my butt. But the question a lot of people also have is like, why not just use package.json? Like, we're all using that. Do we have to switch to something else now, or do we add it on top?
No, you actually don't have to switch. This is a feature that you haven't seen yet because we haven't released it yet, but you will be able to publish with just a package.json file. So if you have a package.json file that has a name and a version in it, you'll be able to run JSR publish, and it'll just pick that up as the config file. Nice. And it'll understand the like files section of the package.json and the dependencies section and all of that out of the box.
Cool. I know that, you know, when Dino was first announced, the big thing was installing from URLs only. And, you know, then became the whole deps file thing, which was essentially just a package file, you know, of imports. Is Dino's vision still to use imports that way? Or I know this is not Dino's package registry, but do you all see this as being the way forward for Dino?
Yeah. So the way that the thing that we've settled on in the last couple of years is the import map spec, which is supported in browsers and allows you to do something very similar to package.json dependencies, but in a standard way where you can like set a certain bare specifier to map to an NPM package, an HTTP package, a JSR package, a local file, a data file, whatever you want, right? And this is, we've added support for this natively inside the Dino.json file. So you can create a Dino.json that has an import section, the import map inside of it. And this is what we recommend people to use. And this will work totally fine with the JSR. And when you're publishing a package that uses an import map, this will also just work. We do some trickery behind the scenes to sort of take all of the bare specifiers inside of your import map and just inline them into your source code so that during installation or the consumers of your code don't need to actually then know about your import map, but rather like all of the configuration and dependencies are described in the source code, which is really nice. And under the hood in Dino, JSR specifiers are still HTTP specifiers. So this is sort of a, you don't see it, but actually they're HTTP specifiers, which is kind of similar to how NPM does it, because in NPM, your NPM install is also just downloading a bunch of tarballs from HTTP, right? It's really nothing other than slightly more complicated HTTP URL. And this just gives them a nice facade, a nice, easy-to-use, friendly face.
Nice.
What about publishing JSX, TSX, CSS, WASM? Like, there's a lot more stuff now that we ship to NPM, and it's always kind of Svelte. A bit of a trick to get it working. Yeah, Svelte files.
Yeah. So JSX and TSX files will be publishable as source, so you don't have to transpile them before publishing them. It's just how TypeScript works, right? And if you're then consuming them from Node, they'll be transpiled. Just how TypeScript files are transpiled to JavaScript, JSX files will be transpiled to JavaScript. For other files like WASM files, we're really betting on the WASM imports proposals that are going through TC39 and WHATWIG and the WebAssembly community group right now that would just allow you to import WebAssembly files through regular ECMAScript imports. And then CSS, something similar, will not quite settled exactly how this will work, but likely you will be able to just expose some CSS files from your package. And then same goes for like any other type format of file, right? Like Svelte file or Vue file or whatever.
Yeah. Like I think one of the great things, and Dino's always done a great job, is like sticking to standards as well. And the import assertions where you can like import as JSON, and hopefully we'll start seeing I think there already is a spec for CSS modules, which surprised me that was a standard, but hopefully we'll just start seeing more of those in the future as well.
Yeah, like in Dino, we have support for JSON right now, and we're working actively on support for WebAssembly. We're hoping to ship that maybe, in a couple months. Node has had an implementation of WebAssembly imports for a while now behind a flag. So yeah, hopefully by like middle of the year, WebAssembly imports are just like a thing that you can use.
Love it. What else have we got here? What are slow types? I noticed you changed what the word was previously. I'd love if you could explain what that means and what the best practices around that are. I think it's interesting for any TypeScript developer.
Yeah. Slow types. So this is needs some explanation for those not initiated.
Yeah.
TypeScript is a very dynamic typing system in the sense that, like, you can be very, very loosey-goosey about how you add types to your functions or constants or whatever. Namely, you can not specify any types and just have TypeScript infer everything. And what this means is that if you have a function body that returns a string, TypeScript will, you don't have to like add a string return type to your function, but instead TypeScript just can infer that the function returns strings because you have a return statement that returns a string literal. But this poses some problems, namely that inference is generally very slow. And TypeScript has acknowledged this, the TypeScript team knows about this, and there's a new mode that they're introducing called isolated declarations that it's sort of like strict mode in that it adds some more rules around what you have to do with TypeScript. Namely, you have to add explicit return types to all of your exported functions. And what this does is it saves a lot of time in this inference because TypeScript doesn't then have to do inference if you already explicitly specified return type on a function, for example. And what JSR does is during publishing, it really, really nudges you to not use any of these slow types. And slow types, it's just a nicer name for types that need to be inferred and are thus slow, slow types. So when you publish something to JSR and you don't have a explicit return type specified, we'll nudge you to add an explicit return type. You can skip this if you really want to, but if you keep it, this will make the documentation we generate nicer. It'll make the d.ts files that we generate nicer. Yeah, it's sort of just, we're an early adopter of this TypeScript, of this new isolated declarations TypeScript feature that'll be shipping probably in TypeScript 5.5.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's cool. I didn't realize that that was a way to sort of speed up TypeScript, because my next question I was going to ask you is, like, do you think we will ever see another implementation of the TypeScript type checker? There are many type strippers out there. Mm-hmm. And there has been two major efforts towards building a type checker. I was playing with one of them the other day. What was it called? Anyways, it's both of them are written in Rust, and both of them are very, very, very early. And I can't imagine having to write a type checker that is the same as TSC. Do you think we'll ever see something like that?
You know, if you'd asked me 3 years ago, I may have said yes. And then after seeing like how slow the progress has been on Rust-based type checkers, I kind of don't think so. I think that TypeScript will do a lot more to improve performance here soon. I think isolated declarations is sort of the first step in a very major push for TypeScript to be able to parallelize more of their type checking, which would hopefully speed up type checking, especially on very large projects. The people that are pushing isolated declarations are Microsoft, Google, and Bloomberg, companies that have very, very large code bases with TypeScript in their companies. And yeah, they're running into sort of bottlenecks in TypeScript here and now need to have a more aggressive fix for this. And isolated declarations, I think, is something that is going to, at the cost of some convenience, like you have to explicitly specify more types, going to significantly improve the problem here in the next couple months, maybe years.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so maybe that's really the solution. Instead of rewriting the whole darn thing in Rust, just make the one that we got faster. So, hey,
yeah,
that's not a bad solution.
My other thought of these types of things, I was like, they're probably not going to happen for TypeScript, but maybe, and you're on TC39, maybe you can give us a little insight. I know you had a big meetup last week, types as comments proposal or whatever, where I think it was renamed, but basically adding types to JavaScript. And if they build a spec for that, wouldn't it be a lot easier for people to write new type checkers towards that spec?
Yeah. If we were to go down a path where we like very explicitly specify the meaning of all the types, I think it would. Right now, it's not really looking like that's going to happen. Although things can always change, right? Like decorators changed many, many times over 8 years.
Yeah.
Never say never. But probably right now it's looking more like we're reserving some syntax space in JavaScript for you to put types. And what exactly those types look like is up to the tool that's going to be interpreting them.
Oh, interesting.
This is like the Python way of doing things. I don't know if you've used types in Python, but they're sort of just syntax space, or they're sort of like comments, but you can reflect them at runtime. And they don't really have a semantic meaning by themselves.
Oh, interesting. I would have thought, like the TC39 will come in and say, like, these are the types, and this is how you do it. But they're essentially saying, like, this is your syntax. Use it for whatever you want, and you can sort of like come up with your own flavor of typing JavaScript, which TypeScript will obviously be a big one of those.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Makes sense.
Probably. Yeah. But again, we're very, very early stage, right? Stage one, things can still change many, many times before anything shifts. Yeah. So we'll see.
I know there is no timeline for that, but like, do you see that taking 5 years or 2 years, you know?
I don't really know, to be honest. Like, it's always very difficult to tell. Sometimes proposals that you think are very quick take a very long time just because you find out it's difficult. And some things that seem very difficult initially go very fast. This is one of those cases where the proposal itself is very, very large in the sense that it adds a lot of new syntax, and adding syntax is always kind of risky because you need to ensure that none of the syntax like conflates with existing syntax, and also that it doesn't block addition of new syntax in the future. So there's a lot of auditing that has to go on there by many people to make sure that this is actually implementable. We have to decide, we're not even sure yet whether we want this to be just reserved comment space or whether we want to define the specific syntax. So still many open questions. I don't think it'll happen, at least for another 2 years. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it'll take 10, maybe it'll take 1. Who knows?
Yeah, we've seen things go faster and much slower. Like some of the CSS spec stuff is just poof, comes so fast. And then other stuff in CSS spec, it takes a long time because people aren't working on it. Because there are lots of hard questions that need to be answered for the future of the web. And if you goof it up, it's gonna be trouble.
You gotta sit with it, forever.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Are there any parts of TypeScript that you don't like? If you were to like start it again, would you rip anything out?
I think I'd probably like rip out the enums. I think we should do that. Like, enums are sort of a feature that doesn't just transpile away, but rather like it turns into something at runtime, which is kind of strange. It's not how the rest of TypeScript works. Yeah. I probably would require explicit return types on all functions, because we could have much faster type checking if they did.
Interesting.
And I think I would ban declare global, or at least do it in such a way that like you have to have one file that you put all your declare globals in, because that's another one of those cases where if we didn't have declare global, TypeScript could be much faster.
Oh yeah. So anybody can overwrite global types in any file with that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that means that like you can't really like parallelize all of your type checking, because by the time you get to some file very deep in the tree, you may have to like type check differently somewhere at the top of the tree.
Oh yeah.
Because you've changed the fetch types, right?
Yeah, and interfaces don't overwrite each other. They merge together.
Exactly.
Man. Yeah, see, it's these types of things that like your regular Twitter user does not think about, you know?
Yeah.
If you look at our like slow types documentation, it's essentially the list of all the things that make TypeScript slow. Like declare global and module augmentation and export equals and... yeah, I don't know. All these fun things.
Oh, interesting. What about when TypeScript breaks? So TypeScript famously does not follow semver. Decorators, there's two implementations of decorators in TypeScript now. What happens? Are they ever going to take the old implementation out? What happens to code on JSR when that happens?
So the good thing about TypeScript is that modulo decorators, I can talk about those in a second. The TypeScript emit is stable. So for any given version of TypeScript, if you take the TypeScript source code and give it to any of the sort of tools that can strip out the types, they're going to give you the same JavaScript. And if they don't give you the same JavaScript, it's a bug in that tool. But what I'm trying to say is, over time, TypeScript does not change the meaning of types in such a way that like tools that emit TypeScript or emit JavaScript from TypeScript would have to change their output. And because JSR never actually does type checking, but only ever does emitting of d.ts files and emitting of JavaScript files, which is stable and it's like well-defined behavior, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about this backwards compatibility issue. Backwards compatibility, this only matters if you're checking, for example, the actual body of a function, which you're never going to check the body of a function of your library that you're importing, right? You only care about the return type and the argument types of the function from mm-hmm. the library, the sort of top-level interface of that module and not the actual implementation details. So it's not really a problem for us. And I think the TypeScript has the stance that they don't break the emit and they don't break d.ts files.
Wow. So. I think that, you know, one thing that this conversation to me has been very illuminating is just, I like Wes is posting some in our show notes, some screenshots of when he tweeted out about this, a lot of people responding why. And this conversation answers that why question for me in so many ways that I feel I went from, you know, okay, it's a new package registry to this solves so many issues that we have and so many people's complaints about the CJS ecosystem and so many complaints about the TypeScript ecosystem. I think this is just a great, great step forward. And I'm pretty stoked that this exists. So man, great, great work. Everybody who's been putting in time on this. Wow.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It means a lot. And we're just getting started here. This is the initial set of features, but this will be open source. And you know what happens to open source features or to open source projects? They get better over time.
Oh, yeah, right. They're super effective. Everybody's just chipping in all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Easy peasy. Actually, another question we had was, and you said this earlier, that it will be funded by the community. But like, what does that actually look like when the community needs to fund it? Because you think about Bower. So Bower was a front-end package manager about the same time NPM came out. And then people realized we can put front-end packages on NPM. And Bower is still, it's actually kind of interesting. Bower is still getting like $80,000 a year because there's probably projects out there that are relying on the Bower CDN. So they have to keep that thing up for who knows how long, probably another 10 wow. years or so, and they still got to pay those server bills.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what that looks like with JSR.
Yeah. So this is a really good question. And the completely honest answer is we don't really know exactly what it's going to look like yet because we can only really figure out what exactly it's going to look like after people start using it, after we sort of know what the reception to this is. Mm-hmm. Initially, we were projecting that we'll be able to fund this for a very long time. We're hosting this on very commodity infrastructure that is like incredibly cheap to operate. Everything is immutable in such a way that it's very, very highly cacheable. It'll be very cheap for us to operate. Beyond this, like there's ways we can do this, right? Like there's ways we could set up a foundation that has members from many companies, and those member companies pay membership dues. There's ways where we could set up a GitHub sponsors thing where individual people contribute, right? We're not completely sure about that yet. What we're trying to do first is launch this, see what the reception is. And like the Dino company is well-funded and we have revenue sources and we're totally happy to pay for JSR. This is like a community effort that we think will really benefit JavaScript and sort of pushes our mission of making server-side JavaScript accessible forward in a very major way. So we're happy to pay for this for the moment, and then we'll see where this goes in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years. I'm sure we can figure it out.
It's going to be ads and install, right? That's what you're going to do.
No, it's going to be injecting tracking into all the JavaScript packages. That's a joke, by the way.
Yes, clear. I know. Well, see, this is like why we want to have a community moderation team. We want to make sure that stuff like this cannot be done by any single entity, that there's oversight between like across the whole ecosystem. And we don't think that, like, obviously I trust that the Dino company is not going to do anything bad. I am part of the Dino company. But yeah, it's better to be like set up in such a way that you prevent this in the first place through, sort of organizational policies, right? And yeah, we'll be announcing more about how we exactly want to set up this community moderator program as we get closer to launching JSR.
Amazing.
One more question a lot of people had was how namespacing works. So there's no like top level packages in JSR. So you can't just go and grab React. It's got to be at a scope forward slash. And it's not just your name. You can make many scopes. So I asked this on the chat, but I'll ask you again. Is there any plan to like pre-register a bunch like at Stripe?
Yeah.
I grabbed at React, which I told them they can take back from me, but like I was just seeing, can I do anything I want? You can have it back.
No. I already took it back. So
no worries. Okay, good.
What we did is we set up a system where the top, I forget how many it is, packages and scopes from NPM. We have sort of pre-registered these. Well, they're not really pre-registered. They're sort of in a state where you as an individual cannot register them without emailing us first. And then we will verify that you are actually Stripe. And if you're actually Stripe, you get your at Stripe thing. And if you're not, then you don't. And this obviously, if somebody tries to register WestBoss, then they probably can, unless you've already registered that. I don't know.
Because
you're not like a top 1,000. But I think this will be fine. The way we don't have these top level packages to prevent people from squatting very aggressively, and we have some limits in place that initially allow you to only register three different scopes, so you can't like just register all the scopes.
Don't squat on my scopes, Wes. Don't even think about it.
I might grab it right now. I'll invite you as a contributor, though.
Oh, okay, yes.
But I like that. Even just like I'm very curious how Vercel got NPM AI. And like did they grease a couple palms to get that? Because that's a pretty sweet package name. But with scopes, you can't... Like, obviously, there's nice scopes. Like, I tried to get at UI... But it was taken already, right? Like that one was probably because like how sweet would it be? Like JSR colon UI / dropdown. But yeah, there's nice. I don't think there would be as much of a land grab for that with scopes, which I think NPM should have done from the start. But we couldn't have predicted what that would be like, 14 years ago?
Hindsight is always 80/20 or whatever it is,
I that's all the questions I have here. Scott, do you have any, or Luca, anything we didn't cover?
Yeah, do you want some secret new features that we're working on?
Yes. Would love to hear the secret features.
So these are not all confirmed to be there for the launch, but we want to work on package scoring, which I think could be a whole episode all on its own. But want to automatically assign scores to packages based on certain factors, like whether you have documentation, whether you have a README, whether you have a license, whether your code is formatted, like sort of quality, like factors indicating quality, whether the dependencies you import are up to date. We also don't have a downloads page because we don't really think downloads are very relevant. We're going to have like a popularity indicator maybe that shows you how relatively popular a package is, like if it's in the top 1% or I don't know, in the bottom 99, but won't give you absolute numbers. Changelogs. Probably want to integrate changelogs natively at some point.
Yes.
And we have docs, right? We have docs for every version. So we could automatically generate changelogs based on the differences in your symbols. So maybe that's
Something.
I don't know.
Yeah, you could just have like added in this version, you know? It's a method or like something's been marked as deprecated with the JS doc. Deprecated in this version.
Yeah.
Oh, that's genius.
We have many, many possibilities here. And I think we have sort of an edge here because publishing source code gives us a lot of these static analyzability things like the quality scoring and the documentation generation. And I'm sure we'll come up with other things that'll be able to provide a lot of value to users. Actually, one thing we did mention is like we have compatibility indicators for different runtimes. So you can like mark a package as compatible with Node or compatible with Cloudflare Workers or with Dino. So like you can see at a glance whether a package works in any given runtime.
Wow. Oh, that's great. I like the scoring thing because that's another thing with NPM is you search for something and it gives you PQM and a couple bars and like, I don't know what those mean, you know, looking at it. I want to see, I kind of do hope that you do download numbers because like I want to see the one that has 100,000 installs versus 50 installs because I want to know which one to specifically pick. And I feel like those values don't give me, I just go over to Socket and look at their stats, which are a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely want to do this. We want to do it in a way that doesn't necessarily incentivize old packages in the same way that NPM does.
Yeah.
For example, like Express, I think Fastify, for example, is better in Express than Express in like pretty much every way. And yet just due to the age, it's ranked lower. In NPM search and in Google and whatever, right? And we want to have our scoring take things like this into account. Take into account that maybe packages that are published with modern features and like based on modern protocols and have documentation and have been updated in the last 3 years, maybe they should be pushed more than packages that haven't been updated at all in the last 3 years or that have 10 new issues every day or whatever.
Yeah. Or it just use standards as well. Like that's a problem with Express. Obviously, is built on Connect, which is an open standard. But like the standard now is Fetch, right? Everything's built on Fetch. Mm-hmm. So even our frameworks, HanoJS, is built on Fetch. So it's frustrating when you go and use that because you're kind of deprecating yourself right out of the bat.
Yep.
But yeah, even RequestJS, 14 million downloads a week. RequestJS was way before. Yeah, it's been deprecated for 4 years. I don't think it's had a major release in many, many years, but it's still super popular. It's probably used as a dependency on some really big ones, but still.
Sick. Well, Luca, this has been incredible. I'm really buying the hype. I think it's pretty amazing. And now's the part of the show where we get into sick picks and shameless plugs. A sick pick is just something that you like right now. Could be anything. Wes and I have sick picked podcasts, YouTube channels, kitchen
pizza
utensils,
cutter.
Pizza cutters, anything you would like. And then a shameless plug is just anything you would like to plug.
Man, that's difficult. I've been playing around with Hono a lot recently. Hono is really awesome. I feel like if anybody needs to write new HTTP servers in JavaScript and Dino or Cloudflare Workers or whatever, should use Hono. Very, very excellent framework.
Yeah.
Awesome. Big fan of Hono myself. I keep saying Hono and I'm always wrong. So I got to switch.
It is Hono. And Wes, you know what? Because you keep saying Hono, it's Hono in my brain now permanently. And I always Google it with an A. And then I'm like, oh no, it's Hono.
Oh, I go back. I've never once pronounced anything correct on this entire podcast, so don't take anything out. Oh, that's good. Yeah, and they just released it works with React components now, and they have like a client-side state management library. It's pretty interesting.
Yep.
And shameless plug, where can we find you online? What would you like to plug?
Yeah, find me on Twitter. I don't remember what my handle is. I think it's... Let me look it up real quick. Terrible at shameless plugs, you can tell. LCASDEV. LCASDEV. And JSR.io. Yeah, check out JSR. I don't know when this episode will launch, but maybe the waitlist will be gone at that point. If not, sign up to the waitlist and you can try JSR soon.
Awesome. Yeah, and Andy tells me that late March, early April, they're gunning for. So hopefully around that time you can get it. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Luca. I appreciate all your time for coming on. This is really fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Later.